Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're speaking with Karen Friedman. She's an author, communicator, and speaker. And we're going to be talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you know, it's great to have somebody on that talks about what I call the regular people, right? Ordinary people, people every day that are out there doing their job, doing their things. And you kind of talk about their lessons that you can learn from in your new book.
Yes, well, you know, it's interesting. I'm a former reporter. I was a television news reporter in my first life. And every single day, I would go out, you know, into the streets and cover a story. And all of those stories were about ordinary people. And even though there was the occasional, you know, celebrity or superstar or athlete or somebody famous or a president or somebody that I had the opportunity to interview, they were never as memorable as the ordinary people with the everyday stories. And even though the book isn't based on my years as a reporter, what happened was I had written a book 7 years ago called Shut Up and Say Something. And the book did really well. But in the beginning, when I was trying to promote it and market it, I called the Philadelphia Business Journal, or they called me, you know, and I said, hey, can I, you know, write some articles? And I started writing articles that were designed to promote the book. And those articles turned into a syndicated column, which ended up turning into this book, which has nothing to do with promoting the first book.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit more about that.
So here's what would happen. I would see something. It could be something, I'll give you an example. Coming back from a business trip one day, I'm from Philadelphia. I'm coming back into 30th Street Station in Philadelphia. And as I'm about to get on the escalator to go up, you know, from the train platform into the station, all of a sudden I see an engineer hit a button. There's people on the escalator, and they start going backwards. And people are standing there. At first, they're laughing, and then you realize, oh, my goodness, somebody could really get hurt. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. I get to my car. I'm still thinking about it. I jot it down. I don't know why I jot it down. I just figure at some point I might be able to use it for something. And I turned it into a column. The message being something about, you know, taking two steps backwards to take one step forward. And then I thought about one or two other people that taught valuable lessons when it came to that message. So what happened is every single article that I started to write, and I still write that column for the journal, I would turn it into observations about everyday people, ordinary people. It could be the person at the gym. It could be that person at that train station. It could be, so I wrote a column once about Trader Joe's. Just the everyday people and what happens that ultimately teaches all of us some of the most powerful lessons.
And isn't it the case that when you really think about it each and every day, there are so many lessons that are learned out there every day. You don't have to go to these big events. You don't have to go and do these major things. It's really about paying attention to what's going on all around you.
You know, you are a million and 5% right. So, you know, some people might say if you pay attention, the universe speaks to, I'm not getting all woo-woo, but the universe speaks to us every day. And the universe does speak to us every day. It's in front of you. It's outside your front door. I'll give you another example. For years, I used to go to this little coffee shop in my neighborhood every single morning on my way out to an engagement. And I would, you know, get to know the people, the retirees and the people that hung out at the little coffee shop. So there was a guy named Steve, And Steve was the mayor of the table at the coffee shop. And he used to be a salesperson in his past life. And one day I said to him, Steve, you always talk about, you know, your career. You obviously were such a successful guy in your day. What was the secret to your success? And first he says to me, his first words were, go for the ask. And then he said, let me tell you a story. And I realized that what Steve did fabulously was he was a great storyteller. And that turned into a column that is in the book about the power of stories, how we all do this every single day, and how they can really affect outcomes in meetings, in business, and, you know, when trying to sell ideas and that type of thing.
We're talking with Karen Friedman. She's an author, communicator, and speaker. Her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons. I'm David Chulo, your host of the HR Power Hour, and we're having a great discussion about this. You know, you talk about in the book leadership insights from everyday encounters. You know, the leadership part, I want to dig into just a little bit here if we could. Because, you know, sometimes you certainly hear people each and every day go, I'm not a leader. I'm not somebody who leads, you know, I don't have that skill set. I'm not somebody who goes out and does it every day. But in fact, people are more leaders than they think they are, aren't they?
Oh, people, every single one of us has leadership capabilities. So you don't have to go to business school. You don't have to be a CEO. You don't have to climb that ladder to be called a leader. You can be a six-year-old child on a soccer field, and you can be a leader. You can be somebody at your church, at your synagogue, who's an attendee, but you might lead by example. You can be a mom, you can be a dad, and you lead by example. So leading, you know, is about behavior. Managing, being a manager, being a role model, being a mentor, it's not necessarily about going to school. It's about behavior. It's about actions that other people want to follow. You can be somebody just, you know, on your block that everybody looks up to, like the man Steve that I just mentioned, because you're a fabulous storyteller, and the stories that you tell have wonderful lessons that resonate with other people. That's what leadership is about, not a star after your name.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the storytelling part of being a leader. And I have found this, I'm sure, as you have over your career and mine, that people who are able to communicate in a way that has an impactful story behind it are listened to longer and are certainly individuals that people look up to more. Why is that?
Because storytelling is the glue that makes a message stick. So think about this. It's summertime for many of us. And you're sitting on a beach, and you don't think about messages and stories. You just say to your friend next to you, you'll never believe what happened yesterday. Or, oh, we found the greatest new restaurant. I have to tell you all about this. And here you are. Now you're telling a story. So when you leave a talk or a presentation, if we turn this back to business, at the end of a week, or I forget the exact numbers, but roughly the end of a week, people will only remember 10% of what you said. They won't remember the data. They won't remember the facts. They won't remember the minutia unless it's something incredibly powerful, like a really powerful number. But they will remember the story, the examples, the anecdotes, the vignettes that you shared. And how we translate that into our everyday lives as, you know, as business people and as leaders, to your point, is think about stories that have messages. So in other words, don't tell stories just to tell stories, but what is the message that you want the listener to take away? In other words, what do you want to leave people with? So from your story, something that happened to you, a challenge perhaps that you overcame, and things are so much different because of what you went through. What can that do for the listener? Does it plant an idea, a thought, an action into their brain, and they think, wow, I can go do this, or I can be better off, or I can go help somebody, you know, change their lives for the better because of what David just shared with me. So that's the power of a story.
You know, it's interesting. I find that business leaders sometimes forget this when they're talking or having their, for example, business meetings or weekly meetings or sales meetings. They really do just what I call list the facts, right? They're going to, hey, you know, sales today are going to be 19.6%.
Yeah.
We're going to make sure of it. Hey, we've got to make sure who you're going to see tomorrow and what are we going to be doing there? And hey, Bob, what are you doing down there at the end? And what's going on? They forget, right? You're laughing because you know it's so true. Right. They forget that it's still impactful if you can provide leadership through the story versus just running down a number list.
You know, I'm laughing because not only is it so true, but here's what happened. So we are, my firm, we're coaches, communication trainers, and we do endless amounts of work in corporate America. And what happens is people will say, well, Karen, you know, my subject, my topic, my industry is really different. It's kind of dull and dry, and it's a little boring. So it's really different. I can't really make it exciting. Wrong. You're not different. So if you approach it with that attitude, then you will be dull, boring, and unexciting. And I cannot tell you how many rooms I have stood in the past 20 years, you know, in this end of things, in this business, and watched people start talks and presentations with, hi, my name is, you know, Jay Smith, and now let me read you my agenda, while they stand there and look at the slide. And some of your listeners may be laughing, but we've all been in these rooms. And when we coach, for example, we'll let people do it their way, and then we'll say, okay, try it differently. Let's start with a quick little story about a challenge somebody has. Let's start with, a rhetorical question. And we make them do it differently. And if you're videotaping and play it back, clearly they see it. But the other thing that happens is they feel different. So I always say to people, think of what we do on a day-to-day basis. We don't say, hi, David, now I'm going to tell you about this great experience that I had yesterday. We just launch into it. So in presentations and meetings, it should be the same thing. And then what happens is you are having a conversation, not delivering a presentation. And that is really important to remember, because tone and vocal variety and excitement and passion and interest in conversation is genuine and real. We don't think about it. But to your point, when people say blah, 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 and they start rambling, they're either overthinking or they're so monotone that they come across as somebody who's not interested or not confident in their subject, when in fact the complete opposite is actually true.
You know, and that's actually one thing that I don't think everybody thinks about, to be honest with you. I've been in board meetings, you've been in executive meetings, and mm-hmm. the executive sometimes forgets as they're there that people are on the phone, they're on their, you know, iPads, they're doing whatever they're doing, and then the communication just drops. And if they would just be more impactful and change their tone, change their voice, try to make a different impact in that room, it would make a huge difference in the way people pay attention, the way they stay engaged, the communication, and at least 10% of what you're saying would actually be remembered by the end of the week. And I do think that leaders sometimes forget just how important their voice is each and every day.
I think they do. We work with, and you probably do too, the smartest people in the room. And I frequently say that the people I work with are just, they're light years ahead of me, at least certainly in their field. You know, doctors and key opinion leaders and engineers and HR people. And so what happens is smart doesn't substitute for interesting. And I'll give you an example.
Actually, in fact, smart sometimes is the problem.
Yes, smart can certainly be the problem. I'll give you a perfect example. We were recently at a meeting, It was a global speaker training meeting. So what that means is people from, you know, different regions of the world gather in a place, and the leading experts in a certain product area are presenting the latest and most important information about this product. And my team and I are then going to take all of these people, and they're going to go into breakouts, and with all of this information they've learned, we're going to help them communicate it more impactfully. So that gives you the overview. But for a day before we had an opportunity to work with people, they sat and listened to speakers, right? Speakers who are the experts, the smartest people in the room. And unfortunately, the majority of these speakers were terrible. They were terrible. I hate to say that. And I kept thinking to myself, wow, there is such an opportunity for the people who are sharing this important information, number one, to be an example, but number two, to really let passion come across and share, you know, not just stories, but put away all the notes and, in a way, put away the slides and just talk. Not that you shouldn't have a plan, not that you shouldn't have an outline, not saying that you shouldn't use slides, but not use your slides as a script, but really talk so their excitement about what they've just spent, you know, 15 years working on comes through. Otherwise, what you end up with is a data dump. And people, going back to your original comment, people might know these people are leaders, but when they clap, unfortunately, they're clapping because the person's done talking. and that's not what you want.
We're talking with Karen Friedman. She's an author, communicator, and speaker. We're talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Karen Friedman. She's an author, communicator, and speaker, and we're talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. Karen, tell me why you wrote the book.
So I originally wrote the book, as you and I started discussing, because I was trying to promote my first book. So in other words, here's what happened. I had a book out several years ago. It's still out. It's called Shut Up and Say Something. And in a nutshell, when I wrote that book, I was looking for a way to get the word out about it. And I was approached by the Philadelphia Business Journal, and they said, hey, can you write some columns? And I wrote columns based on the book, simply for marketing and promotion. And what I found as I went along is that my writing and my columns changed, and I was no longer promoting the book, but I was observing people and realizing that the simplest little things held the greatest leadership and business lessons. And I started to have a really great time writing this column, looking forward to it. So fast forward, last year, my assistant and my husband said to me, what are you going to do to celebrate 20 years in business? And I looked at them like they had two heads. I said, what do you mean, what am I going to do? I don't know. I'll send out an email. I'll send out a postcard. Like, what am I going to do, work at 3 in the morning? What are you talking about? And they said, well, you know, your columns are great. People really like them. You should turn them into a book. And I had thought about this on and off over the years. But, you know, we all run out of time, right, between work and between children or personal, whatever. But all of a sudden, last Christmas, when things slowed down a little bit, I said, you know, I'm going to do this. And that's what happened. And I went through many 7 years of columns, And I identified a combination of those that readers loved and, you know, got the most hits and the most, you know, yay, we love this column comments, as well as my favorites. And I turned it into a book. So the book has a number of chapters, and every chapter has a series of articles. So they deal with, you know, loyalty and trust and customer service and examples of things that have happened with, you know, just everyday people from many, many walks of life. So when you read the book, it's not a book that you have to sit down and go from page one to you know, seven and put a bookmarker in it so you remember where you are. It's not that type of a book. You can read this in any order you like, at any time you like, and it's also, I believe, a book that you can pick up next year or the year after or 5 years down the road, and the lessons will still hold true.
Did you think when you wrote this book that the individual or that the business market would be more where its excitement would be?
You know, that's an interesting question because I don't think I was thinking about that at all. My first book, I wrote to attract the business market. It was directed to business, though it turns out that individuals have emailed over the years and told me they found great value. And this and that first book, truth be told, I wrote really because I wanted something out there that showed, you know, credibility, and there were a lot of reasons I wrote that first book, Shut Up and Say Something. This book was more along the lines of, I told you, 20th year anniversary, but it was also, how can I pay tribute and thank all of the people that have helped me along the way, even people that might not really know me, but I feel that I am so much better at what I do, that we have helped people in a greater way, not only because, you know, we do what we do, but because we've learned so much from other people. So when I sat down, for example, to write the dedication, I wrote, celebrating 20 years in business and everyday encounters with so many valued clients and readers who have taught me extraordinary lessons. Because I wanted this book to be about them, very different than the first one. And the first thing that I did after I wrote the book and you know, we had a publishing date, is we identified several hundred people who I felt that maybe we would have never gotten to where we got 20 years later without their help, without something somebody said. Some of these people are people that I never even worked with, but they really created value. And we sent out, I don't know, maybe about 300 books to these people, thanking them. And so that's very different than the first book, where we sent it out to people like you, hoping to promote it. And so what has happened with this is I have the fortune of, you know, being on your show, for example, today to talk about this, because it truly means something to me, and I had a lot of fun writing it. And to go back to your original question, the individual or the business, I think this book applies to everyone and anyone. I think for people in business, it's a great reminder of how people want the real you and how it's the little things that people remember and hold on to and teach us the greatest lessons. And as one of my son's friend said, he said, I wish when I was in college, everybody was required to read this book. Because sometimes just how somebody treats somebody else, and there are a number of those columns in the book, is a great reminder of the kind of person that you should strive to be.
And you can't get much higher praise than from your son, right? That's the bottom line at the end of the day.
Yeah, you can't get much higher praise. And, you know, a couple of the columns in here, while they're not about my children per se, it's not a family history book, they're about things that have happened. Like, for example, at graduation, or there's a story about my younger son that I tell in some of my speeches, and it has to do with, a very short version is he didn't speak until he was almost 4 years old. And so, as you can imagine, you know, my husband and I were upset, concerned, worried is the understatement of the century. And we would take him to a number of specialists and doctors, and, you know, we either got, I don't know, we got he'll never talk again, he'll never talk at all, we got he's emotionally unstable, we had one person tell us that we should put him in a home. I mean, I could go on and on and on with this story. So he finally did talk, though his brother says he liked him better when he didn't, but he finally did talk when he was about 4 years old, and he's awesome, and he's a theater major in college. He's going to his junior year. So many years ago, or a few years back, he was younger, and he landed a lead role in a play called Lysistrata. And Lysistrata is a Greek comedy, and it requires a great deal of study because of all the Greek words and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, for my husband and I, we were just thrilled watching this kid who didn't talk deliver this, you know, in a public setting. So fast forward, at the very end of the play, he forgot his line. And we're thinking, oh my goodness, oh no, oh no. And this prompter, who was off to the side of the stage, is yelling off to the side of the stage. She's like, Alec, say, whatever. And he would say, what? She would say, Alec, the line, say. And this went on a couple of times, and now the entire, you know, outdoor summer amphitheater of a couple hundred people is just dead silent. And we're thinking, oh, this is not going to turn out good. And finally he turns around and looks at everybody and puts his hands out, and he says, whatever she said. And the place went up for grabs. And I used that, you know, not to make it about my son, but I've used it in speeches and talks, and there's an article, you know, a column in the book, to remind people that, you know, you want to make people feel comfortable when you speak. That what he did was he had people laughing with him, not at him. So if you are a professional, for example, and you make a mistake at work, what's going to happen? Are you going to get fired? Is your reputation going to be ruined forever because you forgot what was on the slide? No, I kind of doubt it. So it's taking these very simple, everyday things, once again, that happen to ordinary people, that every single one of us, regardless of education, regardless of culture, regardless of status, that every single one of us can relate to, and turning them into gentle reminders and lessons that apply in a wide variety of situations.
In the aspect of the book, and by the way, we are speaking with Karen Friedman, author, communicator, and speaker, and we're talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons. Karen, the book is broken up, as I've looked here, into seven chapters. You talk about customer service, when business gets personal, value your values, performance, sending the wrong message, proceed with caution, and love and loyalty. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to go down to the last one for just a second, love and loyalty. First of all, how did you connect all those chapters into the development of this book, and how did you put that all together? And then why love and loyalty?
So I wish I had this really great, fabulous system that I'm about to share with you, but I don't. So what happened is, after I identified all of the articles that I wanted in the book, and there were, you know, six per chapter, I think one of them has seven, here's my system, okay? I spread all of the articles out on the floor of my office, and I sat down on the floor. And I took sections of articles that seemed to relate to each other, and I put them in piles. And then I looked at each pile, and I said, what do they have in common? So if we go to love and loyalty, for example, the first chapter is about a lesson learned from my dog. It's not about stories about my dog. It's a story about how when my dog got old and sick, people were encouraging us to put her down, to put her out to pasture. And I was looking around an office one day, marveling at the 4 to 5 generations of people in that office, in the workplace, thinking, well, wait a minute. Are we putting 70-year-old people out to pasture who are still really vital and make wonderful contributions to the workplace just because they're 70 and not 25? And if we are, shame on us. And I turned that into an article. The second article in that chapter is about the dentist. And I remember having this incredible fear of the dentist when I was a kid, to the point that I would not show up for dentist appointments over and over and over again. And my own dentist had had a situation with her mom. Her mom was really, really sick, and we used to talk about it, you know, over the year when I would go to get my teeth cleaned. And then one day I just walked in, and I'm like, so, you know, hey, how's your mom? And she said, she died. And I turned that column into a column about it's never too late to tell people that they're valued. And on and on and on. And so each column in that particular chapter is about the loyalty to people, like your older worker, like your dog, love you have for someone, like your mom or your children, a column about the real gifts that we give to people on the holidays, on Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, whatever we're celebrating. Is it the pretty tie that we buy that we know somebody will love? No. Okay, buy them a tie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with buying somebody something. But what are the real gifts? The real gifts are each other. So, you know, I'm not going to go through every chapter for you, but what I did was I combined them, and it just happened so simply and so easily. So it turned into, you know, one chapter being about love and loyalty, another chapter being about sending the wrong message, another chapter really focusing on your performance when it comes to, you know, speaking and meetings and leadership and some of the things that we were talking about before. And it just fit together so nicely and so easily that it almost organized itself.
We're talking with Karen Friedman, author, communicator, speaker. We're talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors each and every week. Today we have Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work, Rudman Winchell, Counselors at Law, Sheehan Finney, Veryl Dana, Strategic HR, and of course, our radio show, our host, WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. So we appreciate all our sponsors that are here today. We're, of course, having more fun than one should be allowed, talking about and talking with, I should say, Karen Friedman, author, communicator, and speaker. And we're talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. Karen, we're having a great conversation today, and I want to kind of get into a little bit having to do with the leadership side again. And let's talk about leadership communication, but also a little bit around executive presence, because your book talks about people being leaders each and every day. Sometimes leaders struggle, as we have spoken about in the first segment, to get their message across, to get their communications across, to have the presence necessary each and every day to be out there and make that happen. And look, people are different. Some are more introverted. Some are more extroverted. Somebody is more data-driven, somebody who may communicate in a different way. And as we all know, there's no right or wrong way. There's just being an effective way.
What are some of the things that you see, that some of the things that you can share in terms of the things you've gone out and done in this area?
Well, first of all, I have a saying, and that saying is, if you want presence, start by being present. So put the phone down. If you're on a webinar, pay attention to the webinar. Stop, you know, checking your email and flitting around on the internet and shopping on Amazon or whatever it is that you're doing. You know, I love it when people, they come back and somebody says, well, you know, Brian, what do you think of that? Brian says, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? Because Brian was probably out of the room getting a cup of coffee. So start by being present. That's number one. Number two, you're right. Everybody's different. There is not a right way. There is not a wrong way. But here are a couple of tips. If you are getting ready to have an important conversation, discussion, presentation, summarize your key takeaway in one sentence, almost as if it's a headline. So here's an example. Let's say you're talking about a new therapy. You might start by saying, this new therapy can protect your children against future disease. Maybe that's the bottom line. And really think about, excuse me, at the end of the day, if you want people to go home and sit around their dinner table and just capture the most important part of what you shared in a sentence or two, what would you like them to say? Just like a headline. So when you do that, that becomes a little bit of your mantra. And then what you're doing is you keep going back to that and making sure that everything you talk about drives that home. Then just like we learned to do in, you know, third grade or fifth grade or whatever it was, you know, create a brief outline. And that outline may have 3 to 5 points, not 10 to 12. If you give somebody 10 to 12 points, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, Sally, you might like point two. Teddy, you might like point five. David, you like point four. And Karen, you like point six. Now, everybody takes something else away, and you've lost control. So I want you to be a director. I want you to focus on the three most important, or sometimes I'll give you four or five, depending on what we're doing, and really identify them. And then under each of those points, aside from the data and the numbers and the technical information and the facts and the things that you must share with people, what are those examples, anecdotes, short stories, vignettes, visuals, all of the things that you and I discussed a little bit earlier in this show that actually bring the information to life and paint the picture. Think of them almost as breathable segments. And so you're taking people along with you. So that's the organization part. I mean, clearly, we're not going to turn people into great speakers in just this segment that we're doing today, but we can certainly give them leadership tips. The second is really gain their attention as soon as you speak. So that interesting open. And lastly, at the end, what's the call to action? What do you want to leave them with? Make sure that that close really hammers things home. Finally, one of the best things that you can do if you don't consider yourself a good speaker or a good communicator, if you are a leader or whatever, you know, rank you hold in your organization, go watch a couple of TED Talks. It's one of the best things that you can do. I realize that your talk might be longer than the typical 10 minutes, but TED Talks are great examples of how to take any topic and make it interesting. I mean, there's even a TED Talk on doodling. So if somebody can take doodling and make that interesting, you can certainly take your topic and make it interesting, and you'll also pick up great pointers on delivery and vocal variety just by watching people.
One of the things that I've certainly seen in leadership development, and I've been talking about it a lot with clients and things, is that they have to be authentic. They have to be their authentic self. And they have to be somebody who, when they project or when they communicate, it can't be all, if you want to say it, staged or fake. Now, certainly there can be a script and there can be things so that the messaging is clear, but it has to come across so that the people who know you believe you. And so how do you get that authentic, you know, if you want to say, message across? And how do you put that together with making sure you communicate well?
Well, first of all, you're right, because people want the person that they have a cup of coffee with, not the person in front of the room that looks like a presentation robot. So that's the starting point. Being authentic is talking about what you know and really owning your own style and mannerisms and not trying to become someone else. So, for example, if you watch that TED Talk, you might learn from somebody that pausing is really incredibly effective, and you might start to do that. That's not copying somebody. One of the best things you can do is share your own experiences. You know, a lot of people get intimidated, for example, if they have to speak to their leadership or their board of directors, and they think, oh my goodness, I'm speaking to all these muckety-mucks and these higher-ups. Well, okay, fine, but they don't know what you know. So what are the insights that you can share with them? What can you say to them that only you can say to them because you had a conversation with customer X last week, or because you saw when you were looking at this particular product or this particular, you know, therapy or, you know, whatever it is, technology, here's what you observed and saw. So when you start to bring those things into your conversations and into your presentations, you are authentic. It's your authentic self. You know, I wrote a column. It's not in the book. I just wrote it last week. That essentially is about what I call a $3 bill. And there is somebody that I used to work with back in my days of television that every time this individual would come on the air, my dad would say, she's such a $3 bill. And what he meant by that is she's a phony. And I happen to agree with him because I knew her. And so what would happen is her mouth would smile, but her eyes wouldn't. And if you watched really closely, her body language didn't always match what she was saying. And if you watched her on the air, she would act like she loved you and she loved everybody. And if you met her in person, if you weren't somebody important or somebody that could help advance her, she blew you off. So that person isn't authentic. And I think that people can feel that. They can read that. They don't know what it is about you that bugs them or that makes them feel that they can't trust you, but they feel it.
And for somebody who's a leader that has gotten into this, if you want to call it, this situation, and they recognize they have a problem, it really comes down to really digging into yourself and how you handle yourself and what you do. And there are ways to get yourself out of that situation, isn't there?
Yeah, well, you know, that goes back to where the chapter that I called Value Your Values. Who are you? I mean, are you gonna do something that doesn't sit well with you, that it's not part of your values, and maybe it will hurt somebody or offend somebody, and you're going to do it just to impress somebody or because you want to further yourself? Well, that's up to you. But, you know, if you, for example, are in a situation, I'll give you another example. I had an appointment one day with the chairman of the board at a company that I had been to many times, but I had never met this person. And because I had been to this company many times, I was familiar with their parking lot. And I knew that the parking lot was a disaster area. It was completely under construction. You could never find a parking space. And if I was going to get there early and make a good first impression, then I needed to leave my house early to get to the parking lot and deal with it. So that's what I did. So as I'm I see a space and I'm all excited. Wow, there's one space in the whole lot. And I speed down the lane, and I put my signal on, and all of a sudden, somebody's coming from the other direction, and he puts his signal on, and we get to the space at the same time, and now we both sit there. It's like, you know what? This is my space. And he's thinking, it's my space. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, buddy, I can sit here as long as you can. I'm not giving up the space. I got up early this morning, right? So we have a little standoff. And finally, he puts his car into reverse, and mutters, you can imagine what he mutters under his breath, I could read his lips, And he backs away, and that's the end of it. And I pull into the space, and I'm thinking, yeah, I got the space. I won. Now, you might be able to figure out where the story is going.
Yeah, I have
here.
A feeling I know where this is going, yeah.
Well, when I walk into the office and I'm escorted in, the guy driving that, it was a big black Infiniti. The guy driving that Infiniti, of course, is the chairman of the board.
Of course
and
it is.
And he's sitting in the office, and he's got his arms folded across his chest, and I walk in, and he goes, I don't think he said anything. I said something like, did you get a parking space? And he says, you mean after you stole mine? And we both stood there. And I thought, all right, Karen, you know, you made a bad first impression. It no longer matters whose fault it is. You made a bad first impression on the chairman of the board. So I put out my hand and I said something like, let's start over. And we joked around and we kidded. And we ended up having a great meeting. And any time, you know, the two or three times afterwards that I had the opportunity to get together with him, I would tease him. I'd send an email saying, you know, let me know what space you have, and I won't pull in there. And we turned it into a big joke. So in that particular case, I was able to salvage that bad first impression, right, by backing off, getting out of my own way, not letting stubbornness, or in this case, my ego, interfere with things, and it eased the situation, but it could have been a very different outcome. And fortunately, I still work there. But guess what? If I had really kept playing that it's my parking space card, I would not work there.
A great life lesson. Karen Friedman, we're talking with you on the HR Power Hour, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Karen Friedman. She is the author, communicator, and speaker, and she has a book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. First of all, it's been a great opportunity to speak with you. If there was somebody who's out there and thinking about getting the book, and we're going to certainly have it on hrpowerhour.com right after this, somebody can go there, they can click on to get the book, they can click to get in touch with you. But what is like two of the biggest things that you want to make sure they have as takeaways from this book?
Number one would be that every single one of us has the capacity to be a great leader and a great communicator. From the taxi driver, to somebody you meet in an airport, to an experience that you might have with your neighbor, you can gain fabulous insight just from somebody else's behavior. The way people behave is the way they're perceived, and leadership is about behavior. And so that's number one, that everyday people can teach us the most extraordinary lessons. The other is that you have the capacity, all of us, without even knowing it, to touch people, to impact them, to tug on their heartstrings, to leave them with something incredibly valuable, even though maybe you never met them. Maybe it's something that you said. Maybe it's an article that you wrote or a blog that you posted. And so don't ever sell yourself short and think, oh, I'm not a great communicator, because just the simplest thing that you say or do may impact somebody else in a more profound way than you can ever imagine.
Well, I certainly want people to go out and get the book. I think that it does a great job of providing some really simple concepts that are very powerful. You also have another book, of course, one, as you said, that you wrote a few years ago, Shut Up and Say Something. Tell us in literally 30 seconds, what is it that you want people to take away from that book?
Shut Up and Say Something is 26 chapters from Z to A. Keep the end result in mind when you communicate. And every single chapter takes a different area of communication, communicating change, storytelling, jargon. And it takes real-life coaching notes from everyday sessions to help you on your own with the guidance of stories in the book to become a more impactful leader and a more impactful communicator.
If somebody wants to reach you, Karen, how can they?
Karen Friedman, KarenFriedman.com. That's the website. They can contact us through the website, or Karen at KarenFriedman.com is my direct email. And I'm happy to respond and talk to anybody.
And, of course, you can go to HRPowerHour.com right after the show segment, and she will be there in terms of being able to connect directly with you. Karen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
It is a pleasure, and again, thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Again, the book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from VeralDana. Hiring in this market is tough, and getting good talent is even harder. Sometimes this places employers in a position where they are hiring from competitors. Employers may not be attempting to specifically engage current employees of competitors, but it happens quite often. There are a couple of key steps that employers should take during the interview process to determine what risk, if any, there may be in hiring the employee of a competitor. First, towards the end of the interview, if you think that the candidate has potential to move forward in the interview process, ask if he or she has any restrictions on his or her ability to work, if he or she were to terminate the current work relationship. If the answer is yes, find out how. Is there a non-compete clause in an employment contract, or potentially a non-solicitation provision? Answers to these questions may affect whether you want to continue with the interviewing process or move in another direction. If the individual does have a non-compete or non-solicitation restriction, consider whether the position you're hiring for likewise could positively be impacted by developing similar policies or practices. For more information on best practices when hiring from a competitor, contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is going to be Doug Packard. He is the author of Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. Are you looking for a few good leaders that are hungry to become leaders? This book helps leaders accelerate their success. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.